Tuesday morning, we get a chance to look in depth at natural resource-based issues that are important to our region. We have covered topics including decline of birds, forests, carbon, climate change, pollinators, and forest history. We are continuing our series of follow-up segments based on these topics. It's produced by Mark Jacobs. Our guest today is Chan Dolan, graduate research assistant from the University of Minnesota Entomology Department. We're talking today about bumblebee life cycle and nesting habitats. Chan, Mark, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about what you do with the University of Minnesota Entomology Department, Chan.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, I'm a graduate student worker and research assistant. So basically in 2021, I joined the University of Minnesota's Bee Lab to conduct a study on bumblebee nesting habitat. And just to like learn about where bumblebees like to nest and what different habitats they prefer to nest in Minnesota. I created this project and conducted it over the last 2 years. And I actually just defended my master's degree and am a master of entomology now because I just finished the project.
Well, congratulations. When did you start getting interested in bumblebees?
I started learning about bumblebees during my undergrad in Cedar Falls, Iowa. And then eventually I picked up a position focused on surveying for like rusty patch bumblebee in Illinois, where I started to learn how to identify different bumblebees, which then brought me to this position here where I live in the Twin Cities now, and kind of more focused on their nesting habitat specifically, and learning about the specific aspect of their life.
So I was out yesterday and I was looking at a leather leaf out in the bog. And while I was looking at the flowers, along came a, I think it was Tenaris, the red-tailed or...
Orange. It's got all that orange on the butt.
And big. And I know that she was probably a queen. And where would she have spent the winter?
Yeah, so like you said, we're seeing a lot of queens right now in the spring because all those queens are spending their winter hibernating. To be honest, not a lot is really known about like the overwintering slash hibernation aspect of bumblebee habitat. But where we generally think they like to spend their winter is they'll like dig themselves a tiny little hole, like 2 or 3 inches into the ground under like leaf litter or pine needles, somewhere kind of like shaded and protected. I've seen some bumblebees digging a hole into like a patch of moss. But generally, these are really difficult areas to study because they're just kind of flying through a forest in the fall looking for a place to hibernate, which could just be on some sort of slope or somewhere with loose soil, just somewhere that's easy enough for them to dig and kind of find an insulated place for them to live for the winter before they emerge this, like now during the springtime.
And do you have any clues how they end up surviving the winter? I mean, they must... In most cases, they must be close to freezing, if not frozen.
Yeah, so in the fall time, those bumblebees, those queens, so the life cycle works like in the fall, queens are made from the nest and they mate, and then they spend most of the fall collecting like nectar and pollen and like kind of like almost like a bear, like fattening up for the winter, right? And they have all that hair, and that large size allows them to really like stay warm in the winter and keep those fat reserves. So they go into their overwintering spot and kind of just shut down and do nothing for, you know, the 7 or 8 months of winter. And then when they wake up, they'll like wake up and they'll like shake their muscles a little bit to really start to warm up and like use those resources that they saved all winter long to be able to wake up, fly around. And surely they are super duper hungry. So like right now in the spring, you'll be seeing them visiting flowers and trying to like regain that energy. It takes a lot of work to get through the winter.
I've been watching them for many years, and I noticed that when they do come out, usually it's pussy willows that are in flower. And right now the Canada fly honeysuckle is another source of pollen for them and our nectar, and I see them visiting those. And of course the leather leaf, which is flowering now, which is a week, probably a week behind the Canada fly honeysuckle in terms of its flowering dates. They're visiting those. All of that gathering of energy is prerequisite to constructing another hive. Is that it?
Yeah. So bumblebees are like on an annual cycle to like complete their life. So it takes one full year to do all the steps to complete their life cycle. So yeah, like as you mentioned, like willows right now, super important for bumblebees. I think trees and shrubs are just really important flowers in the springtime that I think are really underrated for bumblebees. So trees for bees, everybody, is like the slogan I'm trying to get to stick.
All right, trees
but yeah,
for bees.
So they're collecting all those resources, and eventually they're going to be trying to set up a new nest. And that queen all by herself is going to set up and start that nest alone. So she's going to be looking for something kind of like pre-constructed. Like I did mention earlier that bumblebees kind of dig a little hole for themselves when they're overwintering, but bumblebees aren't good enough diggers to dig an entire large cavity to set up a nest, right? Like they need a lot of room. So what their strategy is they'll use their sense of smell and their sight to look for like a rodent hole or something that they'll go into and investigate and decide whether they want to set up a nest there. So rodents are really important for bumblebee nesting. It just seems like those rodent holes are like the main place that a lot of bumblebees like to nest, because it's already an insulated cavity. It's already made. They don't have to dig. They might do a little housekeeping in there to like clean it up, but generally it's like they just move into this new hole and start setting up their colony in there.
And then what does she do? She's okay. She's found this suitable spot. What's her next program? What is she, how does she then carry on building the nest?
Yeah. So she's spending all this time prior to finding the nest, collecting like nectar and pollen, mostly for herself to eat, to just keep going, since she's like carrying the entire weight of the last year's colony on her back. It's a big deal to be a queen in the spring. It's a lot of pressure. So once she finds that nest location, she's going to start using that nectar and pollen to make wax and make little wax cells in the nest, which like you can kind of think of honeybees, right? They make those hexagonal little wax cells. Bumblebees make more of like a round, like rough looking wax cell that they just lay directly on the ground. And so she's going to make these little wax cells and then lay individual eggs into each one of them that will become, you know, a worker down the road. So she's going to lay those eggs, and she's going to spend her time half and half going out and foraging and collecting pollen to feed to those soon to be workers. And then spending the rest of her time sitting on those wax cells and using her big size and her muscles to warm the larva and incubate them and help them grow to be workers. So kind of double duty of foraging and taking care of the nest and building the nest.
How big is that initial colony? I mean, that like she can't possibly cover 50 eggs or 50 larvae. Big is her initial investment?
Honestly, the first brood is pretty small. It can be anywhere from like 2 to 3 workers to maybe like 10. Kind of depends on just like the species, I think. But generally, it's pretty small. And even during that, after that first brood is hatched and those new workers are going to go out and like collect pollen, she will still like go out and collect pollen with them, because it's just like having just 2 or 3 workers, it really isn't enough of a workforce to be able to stay home and focus solely on doing like brood care. So for that first, like those first few weeks, she's going to be with her workers also going out into the fine flowers and, you know, risking possible death out there. But then after, you know, she'll lay another brood and then maybe have more close to like, you know, 30, 40, 50 workers, where then she can stay home and just kind of take care of the nest, just focus on laying eggs, and all the workers take over after that.
I read a book written by Bernd Heinrich called Bumblebee Economics, and it was written back in the 80s, I think, and I read it shortly after it came out, and he talks about how bumblebee colonies can be very large or can be kind of controlled and kept very small, that these are decisions that are made sort of by the group. Can you elaborate on that, or have you studied any of that style or subject?
Yeah, I guess I'll just speak from my experience. I've seen a range of nest sizes. I've seen some nests where it's so seems so small that like even into mid-July, I'm still seeing that queen come in and out of the nest with maybe like five workers. I don't think this is necessarily a very like healthy nest that I was seeing. I think this nest was kind of struggling throughout the season. But then I've also seen nests where you're sitting at the nest entrance and there's like 10 bees coming in and out of the entrance per minute, right? Like it's a constant flow of bees. And I think different species may have different strategies. There's some species like the red-belted bumblebee or the common eastern bumblebee that are generally their strategies to make the biggest colony possible and have as many workers out there on the landscape. And then I think there's some other species like the two-spotted bumblebee whose strategy is like, you know, just get enough workers to be able to keep the colony somewhat alive and then switch to making new queens and males as soon as possible. So kind of like a faster life cycle versus like a little bit more like drawn out life cycle, but both are like effective strategies, right, in terms of colony size.
So Chan, can a worker become a queen?
Yeah, so workers are cannot become queens. What makes a queen is only a fertilized female, which is like what makes a queen, can lay new queens, right? Workers can lay eggs, and sometimes they do, but those eggs will only become males. They don't have the ability to lay a new queen, just like a fertile female that will go and overwinter into the next season. So there are times when those workers will lay eggs in the nest. It kind of depends, like, is the nest really struggling to survive, or does the queen die for some reason? That happens sometimes, where the workers will take over kind of the responsibility of producing workers, or not workers, males, but they can't produce queens, which is kind of a really important bee for completing the life cycle.
Yeah, I pretty much got to have.
Last year, I've been monitoring bumblebees on my property for a number of years, and I noticed that there were a lot of yellowish cuckoo bumblebees on the flowers and all that, and I started getting concerned because is that something to be concerned about if you see a lot of those?
Honestly, the way I see cuckoo bumblebees, which are those parasites, right? They're parasites of bumblebee nests. Generally, you would think, oh, this is bad because a bumblebee is going into a nest and parasitizing another nest, which, you know, that's harmful to a bumblebee and its colony. However, I think if we're seeing parasites on the landscape, I think that's kind of a good thing, because that also means that there must be, if there's a lot of parasites, that must mean there's also a lot of hosts, right? There's a healthy population of the host bumblebees for those parasites for them to be able to be abundant. So I think it's a good sign if you're seeing parasites, even if it seems kind of contrary to, like, you know, they're harming something. I think that's a sign of a healthy ecosystem.
If you're doing well enough, you'll attract the attention of your parasites.
Yeah.
So these worker bees can lay males. What tasks befall a male? Is he simply there to breed with the queen, or does he actually go out and help the colony by bringing in pollen and assisting in the development of more bees?
Yeah, so males pretty much have one task, which is to mate with the queen in the fall. And that's a really important task, mind you, right? Like, they cannot, males don't collect pollen and don't return, most species don't return to the nest at all. In fact, workers and queens will try and force males out of the nest because they're not bringing anything in. And, you know, no one wants a freeloader in their nest, right? So most of the time you're going to see males on flowers, and you're going to see males like patrolling and trying to find trying to find mates in those new queens in the fall. And they have different strategies where sometimes they'll sit on the top of a flower and have really big enlarged eyes that look like goggles. And they'll be just like doing anything they can to like try and catch a queen that's flying by. Like sometimes you can throw a rock past one of these perching bumblebees and they'll go and chase it. Because like any chance to try and mate, they're going to do it. So like that's their main thing, is that they are just trying to mate. They are important for pollinating because they do visit flowers, right? And they're hairy and the pollen gets all up on them, but they do not really contribute to the nest at all.
How would I recognize a male as opposed to a worker bee?
Yeah, it varies by species. Like I mentioned, some of those species have like these really big eyes. Like you would see this on a flower and be like, what is going on with this bumblebee? Its eyes are like huge, you know, like, and sometimes it's like their whole head. It's a little more subtle with some other species, but the main thing you can look for if you got a really good eye is looking for the pollen carrying baskets on their back legs. Workers and queens are always going to have this like shiny smooth surface that they put their pollen when they're collecting to bring back to the nest, but males, they'll never have that. It's called corbicula.
Interesting. So we've exhausted our time, but not nearly exhausted my questions. But it's been great to chat with you today. Thank you for joining us, Chan. It was really exciting for me to learn more about bumblebees because they are fascinating. One last question. How likely are you to be stung by a bumblebee?
In all of my years of doing bumblebee work, which is, I want to say, 4 or 5 now, I've still never been stung by a bumblebee. And I am sitting, I have definitely been chased by them from their nest, but they did not sting me. I think generally we shouldn't be worried about being stung by bumblebees, especially if they're on flowers. They have one thing on their mind, which is trying to collect pollen to take back to their nest. So generally I think bumblebees are pretty nice. If you're messing with their nest and you get stung, you probably deserved it. but I think, unlikely to get stung, I think.
I've taken a lot of people out on hikes, and I've oftentimes reached out and put my finger on the back of a bumblebee that's on a flower and just petted
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you
and
can, like, pet them.
They just don't even care. They're just like, don't bother me. Don't knock any pollen off.
They're focused. They are more likely to fly away than they are to waste their energy trying to sting you.
Yeah.
That's what I always say.
One last thing I just want to, you know, recent news on bumblebees has not been very encouraging. What kind of gives you hope for the future?
I think the main thing for me that gives me hope about bumblebees is one, we know bumblebees are really resilient. There's been a lot of change in the Midwest since European colonization, a lot of agriculture here. But bumblebees have definitely held on, especially in urban areas. One species you can kind of look at is rusty patch bumblebee hanging on in the Twin Cities. I also think it's really great that people are starting to like see that bumblebees are these beautiful, cute, and colorful insects. And I think that attention that they're getting gives me a lot of hope because, you know, people are seeing the value in these insects, their intrinsic value, not even just their pollination value. And I'm hoping that that trend continues for insects in general, because insects are just so important here in Minnesota and in our world, and they're all so beautiful. So I think that gives me a lot of hope for insects in general.
That's Chan Dolan from the University of Minnesota Entomology Department and our producer, Mark Jacobs. Thanks, both of you, for your time today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.